Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Cigar Chat, brought to you live on CigarFederation.com, potentially broadcast around the world, the Armed Forces Radio Network. I say potentially because John and I pre-recorded an episode of sharing our pairings before this, and there's been some scheduling conflicts, and our guest is in here, so it's really just me and John and Logan, and I really don't know what the f*** we're going to say throughout this episode, so it may not make it on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Well, it's not now.
out of the gate, dog.
The person in second.
Nobody thought, if you had the over-under on who was going to say f*** first, it probably wouldn't have been me, and it probably wouldn't have been 10 seconds. So anyway, John, there's a couple things for you to edit out. Maybe, who knows, maybe the show will turn into something good. But this is Robbie Raz here with you from Cigar Federation. As always, Cigar Chat is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Go to your local B&M, check out some Gurkha Cigars. They literally have a blend for everybody. Check out the new Heritage or the Heritage Maduro or the cigar that I recently smoked, which was the Cellar Reserve 21, which has a Connecticut Shade wrapper on it. It was actually really, really good. If you like Connecticut Shade, it had that. It had some nice little spice up front, and the finish had that kind of caramel nougaty kind of thing happening. That, if you know me, you know that kind of falls right into my wheelhouse. Logan wouldn't like it. I think John would appreciate it, but it was a pretty good cigar, given the flavor profile. Logan, how's everything in Texas?
It's going all right, hey, man. It's going all right. It's, yeah, it's just good, man.
You guys are staying well caffeinated out there?
I am, man. I am.
You know,
let me just tell you.
I
change the world, Rob.
I'm telling you, I popped a 5-hour energy yesterday, speaking of caffeine, because I was just whooped. I didn't sleep the night before. And for whatever reason, I needed a 5-hour energy. And I was just jamming for about 27 minutes, and that was it. That was all I got. So a nice cup of coffee would have been better for me, so I probably should have done that. But that's neither here nor there. We've also got our conscious Canadian, John. How's everything going, man?
After doing a pre-record sharing our pairings, I don't think there could possibly be anything wrong with me right now. Because now, granted, I didn't go back-to-back stouts like my man Rob over there with the dropping the 11.5 and 10.5 loose as a goose. But I still got some bourbon and whiskey sitting next to me, fresh and ready to go. So who knows what could happen.
Yeah, we just wrapped up an SOP episode for next week featuring the Tabernacle. How it took us, what, like 2 months to do a Tabernacle episode is almost a sin. But yeah, I went with the 10 Fitty from Oscar Blues, and this is a nice 10.5% ABV stout. I went with the Imperial Biscotti Break from Evil Twin, which I'm actually drinking now, and that's 11.5%. And the Angel's Envy Rye, which is phenomenal. If you have the means, I highly recommend picking one up. It is so choice.
So is it not for poor people?
It's about $100 a bottle. So for a rye,
that's a big nut to drop on rye.
On rye, exactly. It's a big nut to drop on a rye. If you're talking about single malts, that kind of thing, $100 is kind of middle of the road. But for a rye, that's some high end business, and it's fantastic. It's worth every penny. I have no regrets on this bottle. The pairing though was a little bit. It was good, but I kind of was hoping for more. The beers were working out well. I've actually switched to the Sobre Mesa. And what is, do you guys remember what the name of this little one is?
Short Churchill.
Short Churchill.
Is it the Short Churchill? Yeah, this is the one that Steve Sokka released. And man, this thing is oily. There's a sheen on this wrapper, which doesn't really translate to the video. But this is the first one I've smoked, and I was hoping that it's going to hold up to where that Tabernacle was. Because, the Tabernacle, this thing is aggressive, and that's all I had left. So I switched up, and so far it's holding up pretty well. This is my first one. So we don't really have an agenda. We had our guest that was scheduled had a last-minute scheduling change, so we're just kind of free-flowing.
Free-balling.
Free-basing, free-balling, whatever you want to say. We're not free-basing, that's for sure, because that's scary. But
dude, I'm speaking of free-basing. Like, have you seen – cut out Netflix for a long time.
Richard Pryor.
What?
Richard Pryor?
Classic.
No, I'm not talking about him. Oh. I'm not talking about him, man. I'm talking about, dude, I used to have Netflix streaming, baby and stuff. I don't really know what's happened in the world really the last 2 years. I'm starting to come out of my hole now and kind of reemerge. And we got Netflix again and stuff. And I've been watching the third season of Orange is the New Black. Dude, it's awesome.
You know, it's funny. We were just talking about this the other night. My wife and I, because we watched the first two seasons religiously. The first season was awesome. The second season was good. but then we kind of dropped off. And I think they're on the fourth season now.
They have four seasons up now.
And you're on the third, and apparently there's a lot of freebasing happening.
There's a lot of drugs. There's a lot of lesbian love going on.
Nice.
And it's more than usual. And I'm actually thinking this season's actually almost on par with the first.
Yeah, as far as aggressive television, and I would consider Orange is the New Black, I guess, aggressive television. And then there's The Walking Dead, which, spoilers, I mean,
wow.
I don't know what it is.
You didn't even pause there. You just dropped it.
No,
thank you.
Please, if you haven't paid attention to social media for the last 2 weeks, you didn't know. But I don't know.
Once again, Rob, baby, 2 years old, just reemerging out of the hole. Thank you.
Well, it's okay. What season are you on? One?
I don't know.
Yeah,
something like maybe four.
I actually, if you read the graphic novels, you already knew this was coming. But
yeah, I didn't.
I did. I recommend it. They're really, really good.
Let's be honest. Does Logan strike you as the graphic novel kind of guy?
Fair point. But no. I wasn't the graphic novel kind of guy. The Walking Dead was the graphic novel that turned me into a graphic novel kind of guy. That's not the first
graphic
time.
Novel?
Yeah, that's not the first time I'm going to screw up my speech tonight. Nope. Spoilers. But I don't know what it is about fans of shows that just want to spoil it for everybody. And I know I kind of did that, and I do apologize. But, I mean, seriously, it was spoiled on my my Facebook feed like a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And that's, as far as the digital age, information age, whatever you want to call it, that was a millennia ago.
Rob, you gotta keep an eye out for those spoilers.
You got to watch out for them.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out. Nicely done. Nicely done. I like the memes. He's got his father's eyes. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
With the baby and the eye, apparently. Terrible. Anyway, I never got into that show. I loved the novels, but I stopped watching the show at the same time. I tried to watch it twice, and I just stopped at the same place. The wife and I, we did.
I'm over it.
We watched the first three seasons. And depending on who you ask, that's the end of it. And the way they kind of ended it felt like it was the end of the show of Penny Dreadful, which was really good. If you like,
never seen it, heard it's good.
If you like gothic horror, Victorian horror, really well done with the way that they interspersed the Dracula and the Wolfman and Frankenstein, Jekyll and Hyde, that kind of thing. It was
basically Tatooine, the monster series.
It's Tatooine, sponsored by Tatooine. Good job, Pete. No, it was actually a really well done show, and we finished that. And we're kind of in between, like, aggressive television. We're watching This Is Us. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that show.
Nope.
It's a drama, but it's actually pretty good. It's one of those shows that it's very emotional, right? It gets you in that spot that kind of gets some emotions going. Well acted and well done, but
I have no emotion.
That's true. We've discovered this. You're borderline sociopath, actually, which does concern me.
I've actually heard that.
Yeah, I'm glad you heard it. I'm glad you heard it. I'm not the first one who said it, because whoo boy.
I know, man. And don't cross me, son.
This might be used as evidence.
You see this shed? The shed was built on the bones of my enemies, front. Hell yeah.
If
you're looking for an in-between show, Robbie, you gotta pick up that Westworld.
You know, I've heard that is...
It is some next... Like, I know, Logan, you tend not to be big into the sci-fi, but this is like... It's one of those, like... I was on Dave Burke's podcast, and we're talking about sort of what show is going to take over from Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is kind of wrapping up, right? It's kind of in the last season and a half or whatever.
No, and Logan is so far out of the realm on Game of Thrones, and
Let me just tell you this because it's funny. My wife and I try to get in TV shows all the time. The problem is, only thing she likes to watch is fucking Hallmark movies or romantic comedies or something fluffy where no one dies or gets sick or hurt or whatever. So basically, long story short, we were trying to get into a season of stuff. I mean, it's been a couple years ago. And I was like, let's watch Game of Thrones. Everyone's talking about it. Let's watch it. The very first episode, that guy kills the dogs.
Done.
F***ing done. Done.
That's four, done. By the way. John, you got your work cut out for you if this is going on the air.
It's going to be a long night of editing. Let me tell you, I'm going to need more whiskey.
Just screw
Right. It's just not going to happen.
But what? Yeah, Westworld is like it's kind of that gritty next level. I wouldn't even call it sci-fi because it's a drama, and like at the core of the story, like any good story, whether it's sci-fi or whatever, like look at Battlestar Galactica, right? Everyone talks about that as a sci-fi series, but at the core of it, it's a human story, and that's what Westworld does really well. And I got to tell you that, like, you know what's coming, you can tell what's coming, but they're dragging it out, and they're like, by the time you get to the fourth episode, the amount of tension, you're just waiting for some serious killing to go on, and you know what's going to come. There's going to be a bloodbath, and they've kind of already had some pretty bloody scenes, but it is absolutely top-notch, top-quality, gory, but good and next level. So, I mean, absolutely a good follow-up to Game of Thrones in terms of production quality. I think it's going to take over from Game of Thrones, no question. And if you like that kind of TV series, you got to watch it.
Nice. It's definitely on the list. There's a couple other things. iRobot. No, not iRobot. Mr. Robot.
Oh, Mr. Robot's excellent.
Dude, it's on USA. I haven't watched that.
Logan actually watched this one. First season, freaking blow your mind. Second season took a turn to the weird side. Honestly, it was like beyond weird.
Yeah.
Like it almost didn't make any sense. I'm not going to spoil it because I'm not Rob, but there's a point where the show turns and you're like, oh, okay, this totally makes sense now. Like, I get it. And Rob, you guys all know what I'm talking about. At that point when it turns, it like just doesn't turn a little. Like, I mean, it literally like, we're talking like Apollo 13, like around the moon, slingshotting back to Earth, like just not even the same hemisphere.
Just
it's
takes
horrible.
A hard left or hard right, whatever.
It definitely picks up in season three, though. I have to say it gets back on track in terms of the writing and the sort of focus.
Season three?
Yeah, I think it just isn't. Maybe I'm out of turn.
I thought it just finished season two.
It just started.
Well, no, they had like a hiatus. No, I think it was like that mid-season break thing they do.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I hate that.
So it could be technically three, I guess.
Whoever invented that needs to be punched in the nuts.
You know who did it? It was Bill Paley's dad. It was Bill Paley's dad. And I'm blaming him right now.
Okay.
Bill Paley's dad founded CBS.
Really?
You didn't? I had no idea. Are you freaking, are you living in a hole? Have you had a baby the last 2 years? Go Google William Paley, founder of CBS. Bill Paley's a freaking billionaire. Did you not know this?
Maybe part of my brain knew that and just didn't make the connection.
For everybody knows, Bill Paley, founder of La Palina Cigars, is a billionaire. Maybe not a billionaire, but he's doing all right. His dad founded CBS.
Where's my samples then, Doc?
Yeah, that works out well.
Dude, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
I will say, once Courtney left, La Palina went a crapper.
I still like those
Mr. Sam's.
Don't agree.
The Goldies.
The Goldies are outrageously good.
Yeah.
Downhill.
Well, the Goldies I'm smoking are pretty old. So
yeah, the original
that.
Goldies were really good.
Yeah, of course.
Even the Laguito number fives are good.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Right. The Laguito number fives and the twos were legit. Then they did the Especial, and everything after that just sucked.
Just downhill, yeah.
How do you really feel, though, Logan?
Logan, if your wife likes the
hey, man, this is I got to be honest, man. This is my hour of honesty.
That's what we're calling this show. It's the hour of honesty.
Nice.
I'm going to be honest. My internet looks a little bit slow and choppy. So does Logan's. John, your picture is crystal clear as always. So God bless you. They have better.
Get them cold Canadian internets. That's all we got up here.
Booze, internet up there in
women
Canada.
And internet.
Who's women and internet? That's what you need to stay warm. I'm sure I offended somebody. So I'm actually, I'm not even going to apologize for that. Because that's not.
Don't apologize to the Canadians.
Yeah, I'm not going to apologize for that. If your wife likes the touchy-feely, you know, that kind of television, you know, turn her on to This Is Us, and that'll get you some points. Like when I told you to use the, you know, kissy emojis.
Kissy smiley huggy?
Yeah, this is the same thing.
I must admit, Rob, my life has probably taken not quite like a complete sharp right, but my quality of life has improved at least 37.5% since I started using the kissy smiley emojis.
You listen and show that you care. That's all you have to do.
I don't think I get enough props for being the co-quarterback on that.
I totally give you totally credit too. And Jared was there, but he didn't speak like normal, so I can't give him any credit because he didn't speak up. But no, yeah, I mean,
he was on board.
I don't know. And the other problem is that Allie's such a freaking weirdo. Is like she gets up early in the morning, she goes to work, she starts work at 7, takes Callaway to daycare, so she's at the office by 7. She works until 4. 2 days a week, she gets up at 4:30 to go train for another marathon like an idiot. And then on set, so 3 days a week, 2 days during the week, and then once on Saturday. So like every other day, she's tired because she got up early. Then tomorrow she's going to be tired because then she's got to get up Saturday morning. So there's only like 2 days a week. She goes to bed. If I told you what time my wife went to bed every night, you would absolutely defecate on yourself.
8 o'clock.
8:45.
It's more like 8:30.
Yeah, maybe we were pretty close. Cut the difference.
And I'm not saying in bed, laying down, watching TV. I'm talking like lights out, nobody's home.
She gone.
My wife is the opposite. I'm asleep before her. Dana gets in. She'll get into bed, and she's messing around with her phone, and then she gets on her Kindle, and she's messing around with that. Mm-hmm. And then she complains that she can't sleep. It's like, hey, you know what? Unplug and go to sleep. But yeah, I'm telling you, I think she'll enjoy that show. It's well done. And if you haven't watched it, American Crime Story, the OJ trial.
Oh, I watched. I burned through that. That was legit.
So the guy who played Christopher Darden is in.
I watched the 30 for 30.
Watch the FX version.
Okay.
It's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It's like five or six episodes, about an hour a pop. It's very well done. And it won.
The documentary on 30 for 30 was legit.
Yeah, that one was the 30 for 30. Now, wait a second. Did you watch the 30 for 30 or did you watch the one that was longer than that?
It's like, it's ESPN. I don't know if they call it 30 for 30. It's like OJ, American Tragedy, or
that's a different
whatever
one.
It was. It was the one that was like five or six episodes, or like 2 hours an episode.
That's different because they did a 30 for 30, which was there was a ton of sports stuff that happened on the day that OJ was running in the Bronco. Like it was Arnold Palmer played in his last Masters or U.S. Open or something like that. There was an NBA baseball game or NBA playoff game. There was baseball. Ken Griffey Jr. hit a home run. It was in the strike-shortened season where he was on pace to break the home run record. There's a 30 for 30 that's all about the events that take place around that, and it's actually really, really cool.
Oh, okay.
The FX show that's because they do American Horror Story.
Have to watch it.
They do American Horror Story, and they've done like five or six different ones. This was their first American Crime Story. And it was based on OJ, where they had Cuba Gooding Jr. played OJ, and I can't think of the name of the woman who played
Clark.
Marsha Clark, thank you. She nailed it, too. And she won all the Golden Globes for that, too. Very well done. You can watch it. I think you probably have to buy it. You can buy it on Amazon. I bought it on Amazon. It's like $15, and you can watch the whole thing. It's really good. Five or six episodes. Well done. Good acting. We're not talking about cigars at all, but this is Cigar Chat, brought to you live on CigarFederation.com, broadcast around the world, the Air Force Radio Network. This first segment is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Check out, like I said, the highly rated Gurkha Heritage. There's the Heritage Maduro, if that's more of your profile. I've smoked the Heritage Maduro. It's very sweet, nice, chewy Maduro profile. Pretty good cigar. I enjoyed it. Again, that Cellar Reserve 21 with the Connecticut wrapper on it, as everything you want out of Connecticut, nice white spice up front on the retro, finishes with some nougaty, kind of caramel, peanut, kind of sweetness on the end. A lot of nice chewy flavors in there as well. Pretty good cigars, so check them out, GurkhaCigars.com. What do you guys want to talk about? We're kind of vamping.
I got something. So Crown Heads just announced they're releasing, it's called Luminose or Luminoso or Luminati or something. I don't know, something.
Imperiosa?
No, it's like a new one. It's Connecticut. It starts like Lumioso or something. I got asked a question. I'm going to pose it to the group. Is that last year with the Waves, even though it's called the Tides, I know that, John, but I call it the Waves. He did a small release with just a very small foot band. He did like a couple, like maybe 200 boxes of each, and then he did the release at IPCPR. Well, he's doing that with this cigar. So my question is, and I haven't asked John about this, but I'm just going to speculate, is I want to hear you guys' opinion. He's done it twice. What do you think the advantage of doing something like that where you do like, and I'm not talking like, you know, a teaser release like a couple weeks before to B&M, like where you wait, like you do like a release 8 months before IPCPR, very limited, maybe a couple hundred boxes, assuming John, I think he probably has like maybe 600, 700 accounts. If you're cool like SigFed, you got 50 boxes because you're awesome. But everyone else is probably getting nothing. So what do you think the advantage is for doing that?
Now, I'll go first. And I don't know if my answer is relevant or not, but sure. I think in the pre-August 8th bullshit days, I think there's a benefit to that. because in essence, you're kind of hedging your bet, right? You're making
a little bit.
You're making 500 boxes instead of 10,000, and you're seeing what are the sales like? Are people enjoying? What's the feedback? It's almost like, in a way, it's almost like a crowdsourced quote unquote cigar because it's not, but it kind of is in the sense that, do you guys like it? Did it sell well? Do people enjoy it? And if they did, okay, well, yeah, we'll make more now. To do it now, where this blend has already been grandfathered in or whatever the terminology is at this point, and you're kind of stuck with it. You can't really change it legally.
Not really.
I mean, you know, to stay above the board, you kind of have to stick with what you did. Is there a benefit to that? I don't know.
That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know if there's a benefit to that from a national sales standpoint. I can see the benefit from a brand standpoint being I'm giving a nice little bump to the guys who have been good to me in the past, and I'm giving it to them first.
Right.
Maybe. Beyond that, I don't know. What do you think, John?
Well, I definitely have a new perspective now that I'm, you know, 2 feet in the industry and I have a whole new...
Real quick, John.
Roger that.
Remember the conversation we had about 9 months ago?
Oh, do I.
Our industry. Remember what I told you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to say that I wasn't there for that conversation, but I know what happened, and Logan's right.
But it's a private conversation. All right.
And Logan was right.
But I do have to say, you know, and I think I had this conversation a week ago.
Wrong.
Being in the industry, I think there's a difference between doing something you like and doing something you're passionate about and doing a job. Like, let me take that back. I love making six figures. There's no question. Daddy likes six figures because,
you
know.
Answering that, the question?
I'm getting there. I'm doing the Canadian style. I'm walking around it, and then I'm going to walk up to it.
If you're going to take this long, I'm going to Gary Griffith you and say, you guys talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to go use the restroom.
Roger that.
Just so everyone knows, Rob's been drinking a little bit tonight.
Just a little bit. See, I went more whiskey than beer, so, you know, Canadian bladder for days. But I think, you know.
Canadian bladder for days.
For days. So I think it's, with anything in life, it's like a trade-off, right? And I think we all do that trade-off. Like, yeah, I like making six figures in the oil and gas industry, but I was miserable. I was just a cranky SOB. I mean, I hated my life. I came home cranky. I mean, really, that money afforded me the chance to do something fun that took away and made me back happy. Now I'm in the industry. I'm obviously not making close to that at all, but I really like what I do. And obviously, there's no, you know, unless you're an artist and a billionaire and you're just kind of doing whatever, you don't have to worry about money and you can do whatever you want. Bill Bailey. Nobody really has that job for the most part. Nobody in North America really has that job unless you're the 0.1%. So the point I guess I'm getting around to here is that you've always got downsides to a job, right? Every job's got some negative aspects to it. That's just kind of how it goes. I think that overall, I'm happier. Like, you ask Laura, my significant other, she says, you know, you're happy every day. You're not cranky. You're not coming home pissed off all the time. You're not hating life. And so there is there's definitely trade-offs, but you were definitely right. I mean, it's not sunshine and roses and rainbows up my butt. There's no doubt about that. So anyways, what I was getting around to in a very long roundabout way is I agree with Rob's point that pre August 8th, it made absolute sense to sort of almost, it's an inexpensive way really. If you're running your own factory, you're running your own line, to test the market, see how it sells. If that market penetration is good, you can blow through another 1,000-2,000 boxes with relative safety that those are going to move, versus if you drop 500 boxes and they don't really move and you're like, okay, well, that was not a good project. And I think it is tough to tell how a product is going to do on the market until you release it. Like, really, you know, people tell you one thing, and it's that classic human thing where people say, oh, no, that, you know, that's really great. That's really great. Yeah, that's nice. Are you buying it or are you not buying it? And you don't know until it hits the market.
Yep.
Post August 8th?
That's true.
It doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, I get you got to have some money invested in it. Dropping 5,000 boxes or 10,000 boxes is a big nut to drop. But why bother not doing that at this point? I mean, the cigars, you've got 2 years. the cigars are going to have to move off the market at some point. You're going to see decline in a lot of boutique brands because they can't release new brands, new product, unless it's, you know, the 1,000 stealth releases we see announced every week. But, yeah, it doesn't make sense to do small batch anymore. It just doesn't. Like, if you're going to release it and it's going to sell even moderately amount, just produce it.
And again, I like the fact that I came back and all I heard was John saying that he agreed with me. But post August 8th, I think the main benefit for something like that is, hey, I had an agreement going into this year with certain stores. I was going to do a store exclusive and now I can't, but this is the next best thing.
Yeah.
That to me is how it looks. It's the next best thing with, with a gigantic asterisk, because everybody knows that even though it's a short-term release now, it's going to be nationwide by the end of the year. So if I'm not living near Sirius Cigars in Texas and I don't want to order online, I know that my local guys are probably going to get it by the end of the year so I can wait.
Right. My answer is kind of the opposite of yours, is I think it's kind of smart because, let's be realistic, like, a lot of manufacturers dropped more blends. Do you know what I mean? And I would actually take this approach. If I was in John Chu's and I had a cigar company, I would actually probably take more of this approach, because you have to be more cautious to test the market now. Because, I mean, if you do a production run of 100,000 cigars and you don't move them,
yeah, you're screwed.
Then you're setting on them.
Yeah.
You're screwed. Like, you can't sell out of them. There's not like, well, I can maybe just whore these things out, you know, discontinue the line in a couple years, whore them out, make my money back, call it good. No. Come August 8, 2018, those things are illegal.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Logan would be willing to take them off your hand for penny on the dollar. No problem.
Call me.
But that's all you're going to get. Call me. That's call all me. You're going to get. So, I don't know. I think it's pretty smart. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see more people doing stuff like this.
I can see it, and the point that you're making works, and it does make sense. I mean, fair point. You release 500. If they don't fly off the shelves, then screw it. I'm not going to make any more. And I guess I was going to say it makes more sense if you're vertically integrated, but I guess it doesn't, because it doesn't make a difference. I'm thinking if you're vertically integrated, you can control how many you make to begin with, and then you just know that, okay, moving forward, we're not going to make this cigar anymore.
Yeah, you don't have that upfront commitment.
But even then, assuming with a company that has that swings the meat that Crown Heads does, they're swinging daddy meat, right? You know, they can kind of come in and with whatever fact they're working with my father, or they're working with EPC, which congratulations to Jose Blanco, by the way. We should talk about that.
I want to talk about that next.
That's the next topic. Next. But, I mean, I imagine John Huber can call up either of these places and pretty much kind of get done what he wants to get done. So if he says, I want to do 500 boxes, and I'm only going to do 500 boxes now, and then we'll see maybe. If you've planned ahead, if you saw this coming down the pipeline, and most of us did, I mean, I saw it coming, and I don't own a company, but if most of you saw what was coming down the pipeline, you've got X amount of blends that are already approved, already quote unquote on sale somewhere, and you can decide which ones you want to leverage long term. So yeah, this is a good way to decide which one of those you want to leverage long term. That's a good point. Okay, I didn't think about it.
But I mean, is John really he's obviously a pretty established brand, and he's got a good following, and he's got good accounts, and his product moves well. Is he really in a situation realistically where he's gonna get 100,000 and those aren't going to move? Like, let's be honest, Crown Heads, even if it was a mediocre cigar, which, you know, I don't think it is.
I don't think Long Perseos, I don't think it's going anywhere.
Well, to be fair, none of us have smoked the cigar, so we don't know if it's a mediocre blend or not. But, I mean, Crown Heads isn't really known for mediocre blends, right?
Exactly.
So that's what their reputation says. So, I mean, John, you make a good point too. So it kind of goes both ways. So you could really say, what I'll deduce from all of this is that Crown Heads, John Huber and Crown Heads, have nothing to lose by doing it this way.
True enough.
Right?
No, they don't. Exactly.
They have nothing to lose. And I'm agreeing with Logan. They have nothing to lose. And it's a good test. If they throw out 500 boxes and they all sell, and you could throw
People
out 500
love it.
Boxes or something. You could throw out 500 boxes if you're a company that size, and they can all sell.
cigars. It's nothing.
Yeah, you could throw out 500 boxes. They could all sell, but people may not like it. They may not come back to buy it again. So it's not
right.
Only
they might not say, man, can I get some more of that?
Exactly. It's not only will the product sell, it's will the product sell and be successful.
We'll sell again and again and again and again.
And again, exactly. Yeah. And if it's the type of thing where it's sold, it's got great reviews from, you know, everyone from cigar aficionado on down, depending on how you look at it, or, you know.
I thought it was Cigar Federation and then on
down. Oh, Cigar Federation on down, depending on how you look at it, whatever. Use your bra.
It's all perspective.
If it's something that moves like that, then sure, yeah, then we'll make more. Why not? Yeah, so good question, Logan.
I know. Next question. Jose Blanco. Good friend announced today via the Half
Love
Wheels that
news.
He is taking a job at EP Carrillo. So my question is nothing against Jose taking a job because, you know, good for him. My question, though, is more thought-provoking. My question is that do you think, A, the reason for Jose's move is, one, because his company's not doing so good. Two, because Jose wants to remain, even though Jose's like a freaking dinosaur, he's like 100, like he wants to remain in the industry forever, and this is the way he's going to do it. C, do you think EP, I'm asking a lot of questions here, but do you think EP Carrillo is now going to file? Because they don't have any pre-market blends, 2009 is kind of when they started. So they don't really have anything. So does that mean they're going to file? And lastly, do you see a lot more manufacturers or industry persons starting to hitch their wagons to bigger companies?
So I love how it was 1, 2, C, and lastly. That's my favorite part.
Yeah, there was like an ABCD, and I think John's taking the longest drink of whiskey known to man, or he's frozen up.
So I'm going to follow your question up with a question. Now,
yes,
and this is just. But Logan, you're a better businessman than I am, so maybe you can answer this question, maybe not. Now, and we're not privy to his contract, obviously. It's not shared.
Obviously not.
It's not public knowledge.
I could probably ask to see it. Show it to me, though.
Is it the kind of thing where Jose can say, okay, yeah, I'm going to sign on with you guys. I'm bringing Senorial with me.
His wife's not.
Okay, I didn't read the press release. I beg your pardon. So I was just curious. I mean, is it the kind of thing where, and this is maybe more a question directed to your final D4 question, whatever you want to call it. Is that the kind of thing where it's like, if I'm, we'll use Jose Blanco as an example. Let's just say I'm Jose Blanco and I go and I sign on with Tatuaje, who's been around for a while.
Right.
Can they absorb Senorial as a brand and bring it back under their name? Can it be like the Tatuaje Senorial? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. I mean, it'd be a complete. I mean, they could sell it up until for the next 2 years, until August 8th of 2018. But it'd be at that point if they were going to file or something, like it would be a new blend. Do you know what I mean?
But understood, because it is a new blend. I mean, as far as new, quote unquote, after 2007 or whatever the hell. But I guess the bigger question that I'm getting at is. Smaller companies could latch on to larger companies. Those larger
and have the larger companies file
the larger companies budget to bring these post or these pre post 2007 cigars back on the market. Is that you see what I'm saying?
Potentially.
Does that make sense?
I mean, no, it makes perfect sense. And I mean, my opinion will be that you're going to see a lot more consolidation.
Yep.
Come, you know, probably not this year, but next year into IPCPR, and then probably shortly following. Is that I think you're gonna see a lot more people that are gonna say, hey, I can't do it, and either they're gonna sell their brand on CI, or sell it to a big guy, and if that big guy, like General, thinks it's worthwhile, then hey, they might try to file it.
Like along the lines of what Sam Lucia did when he joined CI, and he joined General, and they ended up leaving. But like somebody like let's say Fratello, for example,
right.
Popular cigar. People enjoy it, at least in our circles. And maybe he goes and he joins General as, you know, a brand manager of whatever Fratello Cigars underneath the General umbrella. And General pays that, foots the money to keep that blend on market, that kind of thing. I never really thought about it in those terms, but it seems like that could be a common thing moving forward. What were your questions again?
One, two, C, and last.
I mean, you pretty much answered them all. I mean, I just think it's interesting that Jose was one of the first ones to do this. I would not have expected if you would have said, hey, you know, there's 10 companies and you would have listed Jose Blanco. I wouldn't have said Jose would have been the first one. I would have said pretty much anyone else.
Really? Why?
Well, a lot of reasons. One is that I think Jose's brand's doing all right. I mean, Jose has, I mean, there's not anybody in the cigar industry that doesn't know Jose Blanco.
Fair point.
I mean, dude, the guy's been around for 46 years or some crazy nonsense like that.
Yeah.
Like, he's been around for freaking ever. And he swings the kind of daddy meat where I think if he would have waited until after next year's trade show, made a bunch of coin, and then would have said, and I know I'm looking at a very selfish business perspective, but made a bunch of coin and then said, hey, man, it's time to go. I think he could have swung it. Where I think, regardless of who was already working there and stuff like that, I think now, I mean, there's only going to be a finite number of spots that people are going to be able to move into and join other companies, because the whole industry can't absorb the entire boutique part of the industry. It is not viable. But
you know what?
Wait a second. Jose going first is kind of scary.
I'm going to defer with you there, because when you look at the craft beer industry, and I'll bet goddamn everything, I'll bet whatever you want to bet, that InBev could absorb all of it and keep moving all of that product. Granted, it's a slightly different,
scenario. Structure.
But when you start talking about guys like General and Altadis, they have the kind of coin to absorb these companies and perpetuate them forward. I think that's a possibility. But
I'm not saying that they don't have deep pockets. That's not what I'm saying. Is I'm saying from a cost-benefit perspective, like, you're right. It makes sense for InBev to go buy, like, Goose Island, right? Because that stuff's hot. But, like, I'm going to use an example. Let's say Viaje, right?
Sure.
Viaje is pretty hot, but he's got freaking 1,000 different cigars. And the ones that are constant production are crap. Like, you know, all the good stuff, they'd have to file.
How do you really feel?
15 different cigars. No, I'm just being honest. They're kind of crappy, Andre. I just said it. Hey, by the way, where's my leaded Lancero, son?
I got him. I know exactly where
they are. I know you do. I appreciate that. But, like, all of his fun stuff, the people, like the zombies and super shots and jalapenos and all that nonsense that sells out instantly, like, dude, like, you'd have to file like 17 different things. And does Viaje Cigar Company make enough to return a profit on an investment of $5 to $6 million plus the cost of the company plus, you know, keeping Andre on staff? Probably not.
It's an interesting question, and we'll get into it after this reminder that you're listening to Cigar Chat, brought to you live on CigarFederation.com, broadcast around the world in the Armed Forces Radio Network. And John, I think this one will make the Armed Forces Radio Network. You just have to do some editing at the beginning.
So
this next segment is brought to you by Cigar Oasis. Brought to you by Cigar Oasis. Everybody knows about Cigar Oasis. They're our leader in cigar humidification. I have Cigar Oasis. Logan has Cigar Oasis. John, even up there in Canada, where, like, I feel like you guys are like 10 years behind on everything, you have Cigar Oasis too. No offense.
Awkward.
Awkward.
No, everybody's got Cigar Oasis. Everybody. So check them out. I mean, set it and forget it. You can check it on your phone, all of that. CigarOasis.com. Now, Logan, I've got a question. This is actually kind of a fun episode because we didn't really expect to talk about this stuff. I don't even know exactly when we started. I feel like we have about 15 minutes left. But
I have no idea.
I think we started about 15 minutes after the hour. It's about right. Now, let's use Viaje as an example. And Viaje hasn't been around since 2007. I mean, they're new since then. They don't have anything pre-2007. So let's say that General decides they want to buy Viaje, right? They bring Andre on, all that nonsense, and you take the zombie that people love, and you change it to a font mark and a front mark and a name that is already existent in the General catalog. Let's just call it we can call it whatever. Doesn't matter. We call it the Bulldog instead of the...
Doesn't matter.
Instead of the zombie. Is that something that can happen?
No.
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 No. Okay. Well, that's good.
You're altering the blend.
The brand, yeah. And the blend.
The brand and the blend, yeah.
I'm gonna jump in. I'm gonna tackle some of Logan's questions.
I insulted Canada, so you gotta stand up for it.
And absolutely, and especially in a climate that changes as radically as this, you absolutely need to use cigar oasis when your humidity levels drop from 10% and go as high as 60% in the summertime. You absolutely need cigar oasis to protect your cigars. Just throwing that out there. But moving backwards and forward. So last question first. Everyone's going to file that's a large company. There's no question whatsoever. They're going to fight it as long as they can, but large companies are going to have to, no choice but to file. Across the board, it's happening. Regardless, like, obviously, they're going to wait
but
to see
define
how.
Define large.
Well, wait a second, though. But wait. Sorry, John. I just want to interrupt real quick because I've spoken with people behind the curtain, and I won't divulge who they are. But I've heard some of the quote-unquote larger companies have brands that are on file from pre-2007 with very vague blend descriptions.
Of course.
Right.
Who's going to go through the books and figure that out? Of course. Certainly not the FDA.
Nicaraguan Puro, right? Let's just say it's got a Nicaraguan Puro. And for argument's sake, let's just say that the Viaje Zombie, because that's the example we're using, is a Nicaraguan Puro. I, off the top of my head, don't know if it is or not. But is there any reason?
But anyway.
Well, let's just say that it is. Or the Viaje Nicaraguan Puro. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Let's just say that it is. Is there any reason that Viaje Nicaraguan Puro can't become this other company's Nicaraguan Puro that was from pre-2007 that was a totally different cigar, but as far as from a legal standpoint, they're the same thing?
Well, you're talking about a substantial equivalence, which is a whole different hour-long conversation.
That's a whole other bag of wax.
But They're when you get as vague as it's a Nicaraguan Puro, it's a Nicaraguan Puro. Is anybody going to
know? Yeah, but that already has a name. That'll have a name. So even if they have whoever has something on file.
That's what I'm saying.
You absolutely could take the blend, but you can't make it the Viaje Zombie. It's going to become the heck. But so it loses all its luster.
No, not necessarily. It's not going to be the CAO Sopranos. It's going to be the CAO Consigliere.
I think that's different. I think you can't there's two aspects to that. One is how the market sees that product. I mean, everyone knows that the Sopranos and the Consigliere, I mean, that's a wink, wink, nudge, not nudge, nudge, say no more. So that's an easy transition for customers. But if you take a Viaje Zombie and you call it the CAO Bulldog, it loses all of its market presence. It loses all of its branding luster. Right. It loses all and the second part of that is you can't do that without predefining and establishing market equivalency, which, I don't think, I haven't read the briefs yet, but no one has yet been approved for substantial equivalence. And that's going to be the big question that everyone's waiting on is, if you can open that door for substantial equivalence, well, okay, that's the floodgates.
Yeah. Okay. That's a fair point. Okay. So when you start talking, okay. Fair point. I feel like if that were established, then you could see some things like that happening.
Sure.
I mean, maybe there's the CAO undead that we just have never seen, and the Viaje Zombie becomes the CAO undead. Do you know what I'm saying?
Moving to Logan's C point. I think what Jose's done is very shrewd because, and you guys kind of hinted at it, the music is playing and there's a certain amount of chairs. And when that music stops, those chairs have butts in those seats. And Jose is he's a shrewd businessman. He's been in the market. He's seen the ups and downs of the market. You know, he can see where the trade winds are blowing and he's wise enough to look 3 years in the future and say, if you don't have a position with a company that can weather this storm, you might come out of the end of this. If you don't have the money to get your products put through the market and get approved, you might be not only out of a product brand, you might be out of a job completely. And that's definitely hedging your bets that you can go on to a company with EPC, have a job so that if your market brand blows up, You've still got a position. You're still in the industry, so that if things change in the future, you can come back. If you don't have that position and your brand blows up, you're gone.
So, in essence, you'd rather be the proverbial pebble than the avalanche.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. I mean, you'd rather be the pebble that starts the avalanche than the avalanche itself, because you're already done. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's my thought.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense to me. And I think that there's a lot of truth that lies in that gray area between everything that we're talking about here. But again, we're just spitballing. I'm not a lawyer. Logan's probably the closest to a lawyer here.
A third of a lawyer.
John says he hasn't read the briefs yet. I like the yet part. You're not going to read the freaking briefs.
No, I am because it's actually – so here's what's interesting.
If you get paid to read the briefs, that's different.
Here's what's interesting.
I read a lot of them.
A lot of this stuff, like, obviously it's a huge impact to the American market, and I'm not going to talk at length of this, but this is going to have a massive ripple effect to the industry in Canada. There was just a bunch of recent announcements about price increases, and they're like, oh, you know, it's only going to be 5%. Well, dog, I'll tell you what. You bring that 5% up in Canada, you raise your price of a cigar $1 in the United States, that puppy's landing my cost $24 from 17 or 16 in Canada. So, like, that $1 makes that cigar unmarketable up here in Canada. So those price increases are going to have a huge impact. And that's not just Canada. You talk about the European market, same deal.
It's a lot of places.
It's going to have a massive problem to market that product in other markets.
And I think the bottom line is that the loser here is the American consumer. Because
no question.
There's
the American people.
America. There's a lot of cigars that we take for granted that are – And oh, it's God. A good lesson. I mean, don't take things for granted, bro. I mean,
who's this,
your
dude?
Job,
it's
your
real.
Wife, your whatever, your car. Don't take it for granted because it could be gone whenever you know. But
it could be gone, man.
Yeah,
let this be a lesson to you. Hey, next question.
Wait, before you get into that.
Oh,
next.
Before
question.
You get into that, who's the last segment brought to us by?
Oh, Logan. The last segment's brought to us by
Drew Estate. Get you some. Back to you guys.
Check out the Drew Estate, the Drew Diplomat app.
Download the app.
Dude, have you seen the stuff they're giving
Big
away on the app?
In 2 weeks.
You're insane if you're not on the app.
No, they're giving away some legit, one of a kind. Like, literally. I hate it when people misuse the term literally. Literally, one of a kind type stuff.
One of a kind.
Jesse and his boys over there, they've got some. I literally have a one of a kind. I don't have it out here. But a one-of-a-kind travel humidor that Jesse and his team painted for me because I went down on Cigar Safari. And I'm telling you, that might be taken away from us next. So don't take anything for granted if you're looking for Cigar Safari. I know there's going to be a Sig Fed trip. Hasn't been announced yet, the dates and all that nonsense. But if you've ever thought about doing it,
hey, Rob.
Get off your shit.
What?
Do it now. Because
all I got to say is it's coming.
Yeah, but, I mean, all the dates are coming.
Soon.
So pay attention. If you haven't done it yet and you've thought, man, this is something I want to do, seriously, don't take it for granted, bro. Do it.
Yeah,
it's
especially with all this FDA stuff.
It's
now
worth
is the time.
I've been twice. It's worth every single penny. Every single penny. I'd pay absolutely 100% full dollar to go again.
Go
it's
now.
It's worth every penny, so do it. Logan, you had one more question.
I go now. I have a next question. So you're talking about substantial equivalence, and – it's a very interesting point, and I've thought a lot about.
I feel like our
and this kind of goes back to law school
really
days. Yeah, no, well, it's something. It's interesting to think about. I want to get you guys' take on it. So, it all is going to come down to how do you define substantial equivalence? Do you define it as substantial equivalence is it's hand rolled out of long filler tobacco made by hand and is produce 1,000 cigars per 6 pounds of tobacco? Because then, really, any cigar that's a Robusto or bigger is going to qualify. That's like the very loose definition. A very strict definition is going to be, well, hey, you know, you know, tobacco from year to year is going to change because of, you know, amount of rain, fertilizer, sun, you know, whatever. And even though, you know, let's use the, I don't know, freaking Tatuaje, you know, I don't know, Black Label. Like that cigar year to year, yeah, it's using the same recipe, but it's changed a little bit because of the underlying tobacco. Now that's a very strict definition. So to prove substantial equivalence, it's going to take factories that have been around pre-2007 to say, hey, you know, I'm going to use an example. Let's say my father, saying, hey, all of Pete's blends are very similar to this, you know, my father classic that was made in 2006. And if they say that, they might be able to get all of Pete's blends in. My question, though, for both of you is this. Is that do you think if that happens, I mean, great for Pete, and great for anyone that that can happen to. But do you think that is going to degrade their blends in the market because consumers are going to think that every Tatuaje is now like my father?
I'm going to hop in with a real quick answer. two quick points. One, no, I don't think so. I think, first of all, if most consumers can't tell the difference from year to year in crop, they're not gonna care about that. And the second thing is, I got to think, because there's a lot of really smart people in the industry, way smarter than me, and a lot of smart lawyers out there, if they've already opened the gate, and they have, to say that your blend can change from year to year, the FDA has already given up that point to say, we understand that tobacco changes from year to year, then that, to me, is the ball game, because you've already said that you're focused more on the brand than the actual blend, which is the equivalency, because, you know, like you said, that wrapper, that filler, that's changing from year to year. It's changing from crop to crop. Hell, it's changing from season to season. So if you're already accepting that that's okay, then everything is substantially equivalent.
I understand what you're saying. When you say the term that you used in there that gives me pause is, well, to me, it means this. It doesn't necessarily mean you're not making the decisions. You know what I'm saying? I hear you, and when you say substantial equivalence, substantially, all cigars are the same. That's ever been made, ever, since the beginning of ever. So I don't know. It's sometimes I
it's
hate
all about how you define it.
Sometimes yeah. I hate legalese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's as much politics as it is legalese.
Yeah. It's just, and then when you start looking at the way that they're loosening the borders as far as Cuban cigars are concerned, it all looks like a very clear agenda.
Let me just say that is poppycock. Oh, yeah. Like about the whole Cuba thing. I'm just going to say this, and I'm going to say it loud and proud. If you smoke Cubans, you might want to turn off your ears for about 2 seconds because I'm about to rage on this. I think it is absolutely freaking bananas that we have freaking Americans that are producing cigars in, you know, Nicaragua, Honduras, Dominican.
Touché.
We have a thriving cigar industry, and we are going to allow people to bring cigars back in. They haven't even thought this through. If you think about it, like 2 years, let's say it goes high and right with cigars, unless they preemptively just let Cubans come in, every Cuban you bring in after August 8th, 2018 is technically illegal.
Yeah. Now, wait a second.
Technically.
I don't mean to cut you off, but did you just make a Scott Norwood reference?
I don't know who Scott Norwood is.
Hello? Or John?
I did not pick up that reference, I'm afraid.
High and right, Scott Norwood.
Oh, high and right. Okay, I got you.
Have you not watched?
No, I say that all the time. He picked it up for me.
Watch the 30 for 30 about the Buffalo Bills, who went to 4 straight Super Bowls and lost all of them.
Oh, yeah. That was a great one. That was a great one.
Scott Norwood was the kicker.
So anyway.
Heinright.
Oh, yeah. Heinright. Yeah, that guy sucked.
It's white.
He was a classy individual. I'll say that.
No, dude, watch the show, and it's like, dude, you feel so bad for this guy. But
I do feel bad for him.
And we're coming up on it. We got a few minutes left.
Finish my point. That I just think it's bananas. I think it's bananas.
Yep.
And I swear, like, if there is some loophole for Cuban cigars to come in where they don't have to go through the same testing process or they're rushed through.
There's going to be riots in the street, son.
Oh, my God. Like, I just tell you right now, I'm not paying my taxes. I'm going to do something drastic.
Hey, like, hey, when you don't pay taxes, you're smart.
It's true.
Hey, you know, paying your taxes is illegal.
Hey, if you don't pay taxes, that makes you smart.
I will say, I mean,
that's as political,
I know the election, but we won't talk about it. No, but I got to say is that it's a bad answer, but it is true. Like, it does. It does make you smart.
I'm not going to comment.
Or you have smart people working for you.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
That would have been a much better answer.
That's true. That would have been.
You know what? If he would have said instead of that makes me smart, if he would have said don't hate the player, hate the game.
Hate the game.
That's a game changer for me. Anywho,
that would have been a game changer.
That's the largest glimpse into the Robbie Raz political mind that you've ever had. Ever. This has been a fun show.
This is true.
We've got a few minutes left. I'm still working on this Sober Mesa Short Churchill, which is very nice. It's pairing very well with this what's left of this Evil Twin. I'll make it so you guys can see it. Imperial Biscotti Break. Fantastic beer if you guys get your hands on it. We got a couple minutes. Any parting words of wisdom, guys? John, I want to start with you. What's going on in Canada I mean, the wind has died down up there. I can see that.
Yeah,
I love that you're still wearing that Foundry ring, bro. You're rocking that.
I'm rocking it. Rocking it. You know, that's my little shout out to Michael Genie. There you go, brother, right there.
Michael Genie.
No, I agree with, I mean, obviously I'm a Canadian and we get Cubans up here, but I'm 100% on the Logan train. If you buy Cubans as an American and you're supporting the Cuban market, you're not American, son. You're spitting in the face of all the hardworking and entrepreneurs and businesses in the United States that have busted their tail, sweat and blood, feeding their families to bring cigars to market in the States. And I have to say that was a BS, and I can't use stronger language because I will in After Dark. But that was a BS move. Because you're letting the market of Cuba come into the United States. They're operating off a separate set of rules, which is absolutely poppycock.
It's funny. There's such a me attitude. Me, mine. I think the Beatles actually even have a song about that. Hey, I want to be cool. I want to be this. I want to be that. I'm going to buy Cuban cigars. And I'm ignoring small business, which is actually producing better cigars.
Yeah.
There, I said it, better cigars than they're producing in Cuba, and that's being made right here in the United States, and it's actually flourishing cities in Honduras and the Dominican Republic and Nicaragua. I mean, you guys can speak to this. I went to Esteli in 2013. I went back to Esteli in 2015, and there was a very noticeable difference.
Yep.
When you're talking about the quality of life for people who work hard for a living, they don't have to be Americans. I don't care if you're American or if you're from Nicaragua or you're from Honduras. And again, I'm not saying that, you know, Cuban people shouldn't be able to make their money. That's all I'm saying. It's just these cities like Esteli, if the FDA has their way, Esteli will die.
Decimated.
Yeah. Decimated.
Like, remember when, like, you had the picture of the Iran-Contras? And the guy's like throwing the bottle, and there's the tanks in the town square. That's basically what Esteli is going to be back to.
Yeah.
I think you're thinking Tiananmen Square?
No. In the Northern Independence, first of all.
Sorry, I went off.
That's what's so great about Cigar Safari, because you learn so much history. But there's a famous picture when they were celebrating the Nicaraguan Independence Day.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
And they had the four-way street by the bank.
Yep.
They had the four tanks.
Sorry, I always think, whenever I think tanks and people, I always think
Tiananmen Square,
the dude that stood up and wouldn't let the tanks go. But yeah, I mean, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of lives.
And entire economy of several nations.
Yeah. So when you look at it from that standpoint, you're talking about millions, tens of millions.
Yeah.
And these are people who work hard and, I mean, whatever, it's whatever. We're gone over time, but we'll wrap it up. And John, you can edit this in post-production. But this was kind of an ad lib episode. So I want to thank everyone on the Armed Forces Radio Network who stuck with us. And hopefully we gave you something to think about, and appreciate everything you guys do. I say every week, you guys are built to do something that I'm not built to do. I have nothing but respect for you guys. You're putting your life on the line to fight for our freedoms around the world, and you're fighting for the freedoms of other people in Nicaragua and people in Honduras and the Dominican Republic.
Poor Nicaraguans.
I'm telling you, you're fighting for that. They're fighting for that. And
100%.
And to see that go away because somebody decided that it's in their best interest to get rid of that is BS. So hopefully it all gets worked out. But appreciate everything you guys do. Love you guys. And we'll see you next week. I won't be here. Logan and I assume John will be here. I'm going to be on assignment.
I'll be on assignment next week too.
But Logan
no,
will be.
No, pardon me. I'll be rolling strong next week. Pardon me.
Logan's. You guys are going to be here. So we'll have another episode next week. And thanks for checking out another Cigar Federation cigar chat. Check out cigarfederation.com. Download the app if you haven't. If you're not your opposer, as Logan likes to say, everybody have a great weekend. Please stay safe. Smoke some good cigars. Go to CigarFederation.com and tell us all about it.
Call me.
Yeah.
Call me.
All right. There was an awful lot of fuck and shit.
Yeah.
I don't think we said cock balls and shit, but
that's
whatever.
Your fault. Balls is cool.
I just want to drop a little political bomb just to get us all warmed up for the After Dark.
Canada.
First of all, who in their right mind, and again, I'm not an economist, I'm not a political mind, but who in their good goddamn mind thinks that the political upheaval and social upheaval in countries like Honduras, Dominican, and Nicaragua is not going to cost fucking $400 million of social and military intervention as a result of these policies destabilizing their economies? Like, I don't care how much tax money you think you can get from the FDA from upheaving the industries. Dog, you're going to be in those countries for 15 or 20 years trying to correct them again as a result of fucking their economies over and fucking their people over. You're like, that's absolute insanity. How can you not connect those dots? It, like, we've got 100 years of history to show what happens. Stop fucking with these countries' economies. Like, you're going to hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of intervention. Crazy.
John, it is an I, me, mine attitude. 100%.
I mean, crazy. Makes me crazy. Makes me want to take up arms, dog.
Me, myself, and Irene.
It's a that's a good movie. And I, me, mine is a song by the Beatles. I was listening to the Beatles today. I enjoy the Beatles. My wife opened my eyes to the Beatles. I never really got into them, but
Beatles are fucking awesome.
There's a reason that everybody says that they kind of started this whole thing. Yeah, it's an I, me, mine attitude. And in the States, we're guilty of that a lot. And it's not just from a governmental standpoint. It's from a just from an individual standpoint. When you start talking about, you know, I've got some Cuban cigars I can share with my buddies. I mean, mine. You know, I mean, there's guys who they want to go out and buy the Monte Cristo number twos because they can show off to their buddies when this Sobre Mesa Short Churchill is a significantly better cigar. I can't think of a metric that makes the Monte Cristo number two better than the Sobre Mesa Short Churchill in my mind. And I'm entitled to my own opinion, right? You can't tell me I'm wrong, but I can't tell them.
No,
wrong.
Well, we can.
That's the beauty of this country. I can still believe in my own ideals and you can tell me I'm wrong. We can have a discussion about it. But the problem is when decisions are made that take that away from you. I can't go to my local store and buy a Sobre Mesa Short Churchill and a Monte Cristo number two and compare them to each other. But there's a lot of history behind that precludes you from doing that. But it's we're getting to the point where it's, you know, we went from a country that we had to be like subversive to get our Cuban cigars, and now we're only going to be able to get Cuban cigars.
Ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country.
Right. I can only buy a Macanudo Hyde Park the shit and a Monte Cristo number two, and I'm stripped of the enjoyment of a Sobre Mesa Short Churchill. This is as far as I've gone ever.
Don't buy the Monte two dog. Buy the Cuatro Cinco or the Hoya Black and support a company that's been operating for 47 years.
That Cuatro Cinco, bro.
It's legit. And support the economy of Nicaragua. Don't support the economy of Cuba. I love the Cubans. Don't get me wrong.
You know what was awesome? Michael Herklotz and I don't know if you guys saw this. He's got his own blog.
He's always – no.
What? Huh?
No, I didn't know that.
His own blog. And I can't remember what it's called, but he posted it on Facebook. And I have I told you it wasn't the first time I was going to slur my words. I have a lot of respect for Michael. He knows his shit. He knows his business. And there was a post from Cigar Aficionado that was like 10 Cuban cigars you should be smoking now. And I understand why they posted it, because it was timely, because now you can buy Cuban cigars. Quote unquote, you can't go down to your local B&M, but you can bring them into the country, yada yada. But he counteracted that with, hey, here's 10 cigars you should be smoking that aren't Cubans that you can buy right now. And granted, is with Nat Sherman, and there was a few Nat Sherman cigars on that list that may have been able to be replaced with those cigars. But these were cigars that are readily available at your local B&M that are vastly superior to any of the things coming out of Cuba. And granted, Cuban cigars have their market. I understand that. I'm not saying that they suck. I'm just saying that there's a lot of cigars on the market that are equivalent or better if that's the profile that you're looking for. And he counteracted all 10. There was 10 or 15 or whatever it was. And it was, you know, Cigar Aficionado said this particular cigar. And Michael Herklotz said, well, instead of smoking that and buying a Cuban cigar, buy something that's American made and buy this. Or buy something that is from a company that is, it's an American company that's made in Nicaragua or made in the Dominican Republic or made in Honduras or whatever. Buy this cigar because it's already there and you're supporting local business. And I thought that was really cool.
I'm just going to throw this out there because we got 16 stores and, we have a pretty sizable piece of the market in Western Canada. In our humidors across our stores, there's 16 stores, two-thirds of the humidor is non-Cuban product, and it does very well. So even in Canada, where you can buy Cubans legally, two-thirds of that product is non-Cuban.
I think that's pretty awesome, especially – obviously, John, I follow you. We're friends on Facebook. I consider you a close personal friend. Posting some of the stuff at the stores that you're opening, that shit looks awesome.
It's a lot of hard work. But, it's definitely fun. It's true. Like, we obviously, you can go into our humidor, you can buy a Cuban cigar, and Cubans, you got to have your Cuban cigar in the humidor. But you look at, I just finished merchandising the latest store, and half the goddamn humidor was, and because we were organizing by, in this store, we were organizing by country of origin, and half of the humidor, half, was Nicaraguan cigars.
That's awesome.
And like the other sizable portion was really Dominican cigars and kind of a mixture of Dominican and Honduran. But like two-thirds of that product is non-Cuban and it's selling well because they're great cigars.
And again, I'm not trying to take away from the Cuban market because I understand it has its spot. It's earned that market, right? But when you talk about the American market that cannot legally purchase a significant amount of Cuban cigars, there are cigars that have been on this market for years. And we'll talk about, let's just say CAO Consigliere used to be the Sopranos. We'll use that as an example because it's been there for a while. That's a fantastic cigar.
Yeah.
Buy it. I mean, there's cigars that have been around after 2007. These are companies we talk about all the time. Crowned Heads, Viaje. Tatuaje was around before 2007, but you talk about all their stuff. Logan, you were smoking the Kruger earlier, right? Their new monster, the Kruger?
Yep.
Freddy Kruger is my shit. I love Freddy. I still remember the first. Have you ever watched the original movie?
Yeah. A couple times.
Logan?
Yeah. He's got claws, right?
Now, that movie came out, I believe, in 1984. And
I was 1 year old.
Somebody fact checked me. Because I believe it was 1984. Now, it may have been 1983 and it came in whatever, or 84, 85, in that range. I have two older sisters. I'm 5 years younger than
1984.
Was it 84? Perfect. So that means it came out on video in 1985. So VHS, no less. We had to go down and rent your VHS videos because back then they were like $100 a pop. My older sisters, 5 and 7 years older. In 1985, let's just say, so I was 7 or 8, depending on when it happened. I snuck downstairs because they had a slumber party and they were going to watch Nightmare on Elm Street, and I wanted to watch it.
Oops.
And I'm looking over the banister on my stairwell to watch this movie. And I remember when Johnny Depp's blood got sucked into the ceiling. He got sucked into the bed, and it's this blood gushing everywhere. And I stopped watching, and I sat down with my back to the TV and the stairwell, and I just listened to the rest of the movie because I was too scared to go back to bed. That's how I remember Nightmare on Elm Street. And that's still one of the better horror movies of all time, in my opinion.
Since we're talking about being younger, the first sort of R-rated movie
I've got
I watched...
1 minute.
Roger.
You can drop off whenever, dude. John and I will go on for an hour and a half. We do this.
I know. I don't know anything about horror movies, and the wife is summoning me, and yeah.
Do your thing. We'll catch up next week, brother.
All right, dude. I'm going to go. You guys talk about your movies and shit. Call weirdos.
Me. We're going to enjoy it. I'm going to finish the rest of my beer and prattle on. But, right. Logan,
Call me.
The show today with your questions. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, because I'm fucking awesome. Bye.
Cool, brother.
So the first movie, the first R-rated movie I ever watched, same kind of deal. I was staying with my natural dad, and I somehow managed to rent RoboCop.
Nice.
And I must have been like, I don't know how old I was. It would have been like 14 when I watched RoboCop, maybe 15. It was the first, I mean, R-rated movies weren't allowed in the house, and I just didn't have R-rated movies in the house. So I had no idea what that looked like. And, man.
That would have been, if you rented it, it was probably 1988.
Yeah.
So and, I would have been 11.
Yeah, so I would have been 14. And, yeah, that movie messed me up. Like, it, you know, from the initial scene where the 8209 blew the dude away in the conference room, just blew him away, and it was like the most graphic, visceral thing I'd ever seen. And then, you know, the end when Red Foreman got smoked by the truck, I mean, that haunted me for like 2 years afterwards. That was an interesting experience.
Dude, we could talk about horror movies, dude, until the cows come home, because... And actually, I just recently watched The Exorcist, which to me is the scariest film ever made. Oh,
so scary.
And it's funny, man. There's a generational gap. And I remember when I was in college and I was dating a girl and they re-released, and it was, you know, it might have been 2002. Probably was 2002. It was the 30th anniversary of that, because I think it was 72 when that came out. Yeah. The 30th anniversary. They re-released that movie, and I went to go watch it in the theater, and there's something about that film. It frightens me beyond all being. I was raised Catholic. My parents never forced it on me, but I have a Catholic background, so it hits a little closer to home. And I learned a lot when I went to watch that film when it came out. They re-released it in theaters. There was such polarizing reactions. The older people. And the younger people, older people, I could hear people crying while they're watching it. And then I hear younger people laughing because the effects don't age well, right?
No.
But it's people who are laughing at it because it's silly, and people who are, you know, looking at it and like remembering like when this film came out, and it was kind of groundbreaking. And we're going way off topic, but I just wonder, Linda Blair's parents, Linda Blair played The Exorcist. And granted, she didn't do the voicing and all that. And if you've watched the film, it's aggressive. I mean, there's the scene where she's on the bed with the crucifix saying, fuck me, and stabbing herself in the vagina with the crucifix is awful.
Awful.
And you think that this was like a 12-year-old girl who was asked to do this. And my wife and I have this conversation. If we had a kid, we don't have children, but if we did, would we allow them to be in a film like this? Fuck no.
Fuck no.
She married Rick James after that movie, for God's sake. Tell me that her her ability to deduce what's good and what's bad was, I mean, Rick James, bitch. She married Rick James.
And just
a huge drug problem, but she never recovered from that film.
Finish up that segue of that. I actually was at the Horror Expo here a couple years back and saw with Linda Blair. They actually were airing the original stock of The Exorcist, and I saw it with a good buddy of mine who's a huge horror fan. And she talked about that film and how it affected her psyche. And one of the things I didn't know is that scene where she like kind of flipped up in the bed or whatever.
She broke her back.
She broke her back. The piston machine they had on her, like they broke her back, and it took her like 2.5 years of serious, intense work to get back to not being normal. Crippled for life. Yeah.
There's one scene where she grabs her mom and throws her mom to the ground. And the actress who plays her mom was a well-established actress, and I can't think of her name right now. But there's like – and she admitted afterwards, she lets out this blood-curdling scream, and that was legit. Yeah. Like, she was afraid for herself when that happened. And there's a lot of shit that happens with movies like that it's just enough to make you think that, wow, there's something else happening here. Like you look at movies like The Poltergeist, the original Poltergeist.
Terrifying.
A lot of the people from that movie like died and shit. Mm-hmm. And
in weird ways too.
Yeah. And then you think of like The Passion of the Christ, the guy who played Jesus, like he was struck by lightning while the movie was being made.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's an urban legend or not. I read it somewhere. But like shit like that, it's like, whoa, bro. That's that kind of brings everything back to reality. But The Exorcist, that movie, that'll fuck with you for hours. My wife and I recently watched it, and it's one of those things where it freaks me out to my very core. Like I'm sleeping with the lights on that night. Mm-hmm. But if anybody wants to watch it, I'm down to watch it because I love being scared. And we actually went to they have a haunted house thing that they do in my area called the Pirates of Emerson, and they do it every year. It's in 25 years, and they have these haunted houses. And if you're on Facebook and you saw recently that Jimmy Fallon and Kevin Hart went to a haunted house and they had GoPros with night vision and everything and videotaped it, it's just like that, where people run out, they grab you and fuck with you a lot.
Yeah.
And I love that shit, dude. It's so fun. I love being scared when there's no consequences.
Yeah.
Because I know that like the guy who jumps out with the chainsaw, it's just chainsaw sounds. He doesn't have a real chainsaw. He's not going to cut me in half. But it's pretty awesome. We went with a group of people, and it was four of us, and they have five or six different haunted houses. And I'm of the mind, when you're going through the haunted house, I don't want to be I'd rather be the first person through and get the major scare than be the last person through who has the person chasing you. I don't want to be that guy.
With the chainsaw.
But there was one. We had this girl with us, and she was a friend of a friend. And she's a sweetheart. She looks like almost exactly like Titanic. What's the girl's name who's in Titanic? The
actress? Kate Winslet.
She looks like Kate Winslet from Titanic.
Hello.
Beautiful girl. She's like 23, 24. And she was in front. She was going first. And we go into this room. And it's like a strobe light. And there's blood on all over the walls. And I see a toilet. And there's like blood everywhere. And she's like about a foot in front of me. And I hear her just saying, no, 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 no. And like this guy comes out with a chainsaw and starts chasing her around the room.
Yeah, when you break out the chainsaw, that's when the hair on the back of my neck starts, you know, it's like this shit just got real.
But it's so much fun because, I mean, you know it's not a real chainsaw, but in the moment you're just like scared to death. I love that shit. I love it. I love being scared. But her reaction was freaking priceless, dude. She was frightened. And this was the first time I met that girl. After we walked to the room, I gave her like a really strong hug. I was like, you're okay. You're okay. And she kind of had to catch her breath and everything. It was stuff like that is a ton of fun. And a lot of credit to the actors who do those kinds of things. But anyway, we got off topic, but I really enjoy being scared.
Mm-hmm. Bringing it back to cigars, dialing it back.
No way.
No, bringing it back to cigars. I do think that the decision to open the market more to Cubans was really, I mean, obviously politically a bad choice. It was, you know, especially following this whole FDA thing with cigars, it sent the wrong message to the market. I mean, I know what he's trying to do. I know he's trying to President Obama is trying to sort of put a wedge in there to sort of open that door. But like in doing so, you've really sent the wrong message to the cigar market. You know, the cigar market in the United States has been around for a very long time. And at one hand, you're giving a middle finger to the entire cigar market while you're bringing, do you think that's going to do anything other than make the existing cigar market even more aggressively negative towards the Cubans and the Cuban market? Like that doesn't help anybody really. I mean, yeah, great. Consumers can go over to Cuba and get I can't remember the name, but it's like I was over there in last November, and there's all these American college students with their Havana Club 7 and their one Cohiba, and they were so excited. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, bro, like, yeah, it's a cool experience and you're young and you like, it's very exciting for you. But all I could think was like, how is this impacting the American economy from you doing this? And like people, like you said, it's a me mentality. People don't get that. They don't see the big picture, but the big picture for the devastation this is going to cause to, markets that have been in the United States for a long time is really, it's really sad. It's really a short term bad decision.
No, and you're right. I mean, the timing. I mean, the Cuban, what's the term?
Embargo
was bound to be lifted, right?
Of course.
And it's going to happen, but the timing is just so bad. With mm-hmm. you know, we're going to start alleviating some of the restrictions. It's not lifted. It's not. I can't go down to my local B&M and buy Monte Cristo number twos. But I can go to Cuba or Mexico or wherever, and I can come home with them. I can go to a market where it's legal to purchase them, and I can bring them home, and it's okay. And that's fine. I think that type of restriction, the lifting of those types of restrictions, was bound to happen. The timing is awful, and I mean, timing for me when it comes to that kind of thing is what comes with anything really. Timing is paramount, right? I mean, timing for anything, timing for a job, timing for anything is paramount. You want to be at the right time. You're driving, you see an accident happening in front of you, and you think, man, if I would have left 3 minutes earlier, this could have been me.
Yeah.
Timing is paramount, and the timing on this is awful because it really looks like, hey, we're going to promote the Cuban markets as opposed to companies that are based in Connecticut or based in Miami. And Pennsylvania, exactly. You see these, and you even see the video of Marco Rubio visiting the J.C. Newman factories. And it's like, and God bless him for pushing for that, because these are companies that have been around for, I mean, J.C. Newman's been around forever, right?
Yeah.
And these companies have been around forever, especially these places in Miami. Titan to Bronze has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at being totally decimated by these restrictions. But at the same time, we're opening up the market to Cuban companies that have been communist and outside of our what's the term I'm looking for here? Outside of our market forever, and we're going to allow them in while at the same time killing American companies. It doesn't send the right message.
To say nothing of what does that say to all the you know, the bad feelings for all the ex-Cubans, the ex-Cuban Pats who have come to the United States to make a new life for themselves, having given mm-hmm. up all their land, all their money, all their property. Like,
it's a lot of bad blood.
It's a lot of bad blood. I mean, that bad blood was kind of. You know, going aside a little bit with the newest generations of Cuban Americans, but I mean, God, way to stick that knife in and twist it.
Yeah, really, right? I mean, it's the knife's been in there for, you know, 40, 50 years, and now we're going to, you know, give it a nice fresh twist to open up the wounds. But I'm an idealist at heart, and I'm hopeful that it's all going to work in the right way, where these companies who have worked hard in America and in countries like Nicaragua and Honduras, the Dominican Republic, where these people count on this that's their trade. I mean, this is their profession. They're professionals at this. They're the best in the world, and we're going to take that away from them. It's not what this country was built on.
Yeah, Alejandro Turrent from Casa Turrent, of course, the biggest manufacturers, they manufacture the San Andreas Maduro wrapper and San Andreas tobacco, which is used in a lot of cigars in the market. I saw him just recently at the Rocky Mountain Smokeout, and the whole time he was there, really, really great guy, and the whole time I was thinking, what is this FDA legislation going to do to your livelihood, multiple generations of growing tobacco in Mexico to support the market? What is this going to do to your livelihood, all the people you employ, and to say nothing of Mexico and the region you live in as a result of these decisions? Like, it's just, you know, it's a bad call. It's a bad call.
There's still part of me that hopes that all of this, these regulations, just political grandstanding.
Yeah.
And the substantial equivalence, which we keep going back to, is the loophole that's put in that says, hey, we're going to make it look like we're really crashing down on tobacco.
Yeah.
But you guys can still produce your product. And yeah. I'm hopeful, and I understand that is a naive and idealistic view. But I'm hoping, and I always hope that good will win out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to
hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
Yeah, I just hope the good will win out and we can still enjoy these Sobre Mesa short Churchills. This is a really good cigar, by the way.
It's a really good cigar. I actually had the I bought a 5-pack from I can't remember if I bought that from Small Batch Cigars or bought that. I think I bought that from Small Batch Cigars.
Small Batch, great California company.
Yeah, great.
Smoke local.
Yeah, if you can't find what you want on, you know, and again, we have no affiliation. I don't get any money from the Cigar Federation store.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you can't get anything from Cigar Federation, I wholeheartedly support Small Batch. Obviously, I support your local B&M because, you know, that's a small business owner. Support your local B&M. But I did place a really nice order when I was down in Vegas, and they accommodated me in every way. And I got the Sobre Mesa Short Churchills as a part of all the other stuff I got, some Illusione stuff, which I haven't smoked yet. But that Short Churchill, Steve was absolutely right. I smoked the regular Sobre Mesa, and it's good, but he's on point. That Short Churchill is, again, it's one of those Vitolas in the size. It's magical. It's pretty special, and I think, you know, if you watch the interview with him at IPCBR, he kind of goes on and waxes poetic, and it's deserved. It's a really, really good cigar.
It's one of those cigars that shows you that the difference in Vitola makes a huge difference.
Huge. Huge.
So the way you experience a cigar. Yeah. So any final topics you want to touch on? We've been here for a while. John, you and I have been doing a show for like 6 hours.
Yeah, it's been like 6 hours of drinking and smoking, you know, as we do for work.
Copy that.
You know, support the American market, support the Nicaraguan, support Honduras, support Dominicans, because they're going to need your support, especially over the next 2 years as we go through this whole bullshit with the FDA. You know, yeah, you can go over to Cuba and you can get your Havana Club 7, and you can get your Monte Cristo 2, your Partagas Serie D number 4. But, you know, continue to buy and support your local B&Ms, because those are the guys that are going to need your support over the next couple of years to weather this storm of the FTA. They need your love. You know, don't forget about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got an international trip coming up, and I would be a liar if I said I'm not going to try to come home with some Havana Club. So there's that. I probably won't bring home any Cuban cigars, but I'm probably going to bring home some Cuban rum if I can.
How about some Florida Canyon while you're traveling? You know, if you can get it in the airports?
Absolutely. I got a little hiccup going. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I can get Havana Club – or not Havana Club. I can get Florida Canyon locally, but duty-free.
Duty-free, son.
You know, Joey Tribbiani was always happiest after they said duty-free, so. So I'm happy with that too. But there's a lot at duty free. I mean, when last time I came back, I brought back that bottle of Glenlivet Maduro. Mm-hmm. That was, I think, American oak. Man, yep. These hiccups. American oak that you can only get through duty free. And Johnny Walker Spice Road, only can get through duty free. So there will be some duty free booze coming back to the Double R household. That's not something I'm gonna lie about, but. Yeah, man. I mean, support local as much as you can, and you know, join CRA, and yep. You know, donate money and for the cause, and do all those things so you can still enjoy the Sobre Mesa short Churchills and the Viajes and the Crowned Heads and everything moving forward, because they're beautiful products and we like talking about them, frankly. So there's that. Everybody, thanks for checking out another Cigar Chat. John, thanks for being available to sit in for our guest.
Roger that.
All right, guys. We'll be back next week. I won't be here. John will be sitting in for me, correct?
Yep.
I'll be on assignment on an international trip, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But anyway, everybody have a great weekend. Stay safe. Smoke some good Nicaraguan and Honduran and American and Dominican Republican cigars, and tell us all about it on cigarfederation.com.
Call me.